This was in June in Asheville, North Carolina. My boyfriend and my dog and I were camping along the Appalachian Trail, along the river where we were kayaking. We had got done kayaking for the day, and we were relaxing at our campsite before dinner. Our site was only like 10 feet from the trail, and the river was right behind that. We had some dramatic and stressful events while kayaking that day, and we needed to unwind and relax. We were running low on weed, so we had just eaten some edibles, because we are stoners and why not? My boyfriend was half asleep in his hammock. I was at the river's edge, and I was laying on a towel near the tent, when a man came walking up to us, blabbing about giving us his trash. I was at first confused, but he was wearing a backpack and an Appalachian Trail shirt. So I quickly realized he was a serious hiker on the trail and wanted us to take his trash for him, which is a pretty reasonable request. However, we were only a 5-minute walk down the trail and there was basic civilization, including a dumpster and whatnot, literally 5 minutes down the trail. I told him this because I'm sure he would rather just put it in the bin himself in that case. But he then pulled out a large bag of weed and said I could have some if I took his trash. I was a little confused, but I would never turn down free weed, so I was like, sure, whatever, we will throw it out. He gave me a small handful of nugs and threw his trash into our bag, and I asked him some small stuff like, oh, are you through hiking? And whatever basic stuff. He said he was and had been for a couple of months and asked if he could stay and drink a beer. And I was like, sure, this guy seems like he really just needs to talk to some people or something. And I wasn't doing anything, and he seems normal enough, so why not? I did think he might have only been there because I looked like a girl who was alone, if he hadn't noticed the hammock. But I thought at most he would be mildly disappointed he couldn't hit on me or whatever. My boyfriend popped his head up at some point, and the hiker did seem surprised to see him, which confirmed that he thought I was alone. He kept saying stuff like, oh, don't worry, I'm not one of those creepy people. Like, okay, dude, I hope not. I was trying to be friendly and just ask some basic questions. What about trail stories? And the guy was answering normal enough. My boyfriend and I decided to smoke some weed by the river and of course offered the guy some because he had given us the weed in the first place. He hits it and coughs a bunch and that's when stuff gets weird. As a stoner, we were used to seeing people get too high and act a little weird, but this guy was being incredibly strange. He talked and talked and talked, but it was so quiet we couldn't really hear a thing he said. I tried to seem interested and respond to stuff, but I had no clue what he was saying. He was just staring at the river, talking to himself, and then occasionally looking at us like we were part of the conversation. And me be like, oh, right, ha ha ha. It was so strange and confusing. He also drank like 3 beers at least and 2 cigarettes during the time, so it was not a short amount of time. This man would not leave. He started talking to Siri on his phone when we stopped answering him, and he was like yelling at Siri, calling her a bitch. At one point out of nowhere, he goes, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do I seem like a serial killer? My boyfriend and I looked at each other like we had both just had the same thought, that this guy had just gotten way too creepy. We both nervously laughed and said, oh, 1, meaning not at all for sure. We tried to act casual like it was definitely a joke or something, but we were both thinking, what the fuck? After that, I said, nope, this guy's not welcome here, and I got in the hammock, and so did my boyfriend. And we kind of sat there talking to each other a bit, and not really acknowledging the guy. He had said he was going to smoke 1 more cig and then leave. And I swear, that was the longest cigarette I've ever witnessed in my life. It took him so long to finish it, and I was just watching it get shorter and shorter, hoping he would just leave already. He finally got up and put his stuff on and left. But it was almost dark, so we knew he would not go too far before setting up camp for the night too. That night, we thought for sure this guy would come back and kill us. Throughout the night, people did walk by on the trail multiple times, but it was other people we had seen on the trail during the day. One being a couple that seemed to be on drugs and maybe lived up the trail. We literally planned what we would do if he came back, which was grab the dog and jump in the river and float to the boat ramp downstream. Anyway, he didn't end up showing up that night, and we didn't see him again. But it was enough to freak us out. It's possible this guy was just lacking some social skills, and also had been in the woods by himself for a while. But it's also possible that he really had some creepy shit going on. And I'm definitely glad I wasn't alone when he walked up. I grew up in southern Appalachia, in western North Carolina, 30 minutes outside of the town of Asheville. The hills and hollers of the Appalachian Mountains are some of the oldest mountains in the world. Some of the rock formations dating back over a billion years. That quite literally means they were here before there were terrestrial animals. As with most things that have been on Earth for a long time, there are inexplicable anomalies, both benevolent and malevolent. For example, the Brown Mountain Lights. Never in my life have I felt threatened or uneasy when witnessing them from Wise Man's View. They're neither good nor evil, they just are. On the benevolent side, sometimes you walk through an abandoned old church up near Mom and Dad's property line. You can feel good, warm, and happy energy. It's like that first warm day of summer when the sunshine is not too hot, but it's not too cold. Well, this story is not about one such anomaly. It's about something that was definitely malevolent. About a decade ago, I was in night school up at AB Tech, going to school for some automotive mechanics. I would go into class at about 2 p.m. after I got off my part-time job, and I would end up getting home at about 10:30 p.m., depending on the traffic. Every night I drove the same road in my old 1973 W200 Dodge pickup. Some nights it would get rather boring and I would take a different route, jump off of I-40 and drive the back roads. On this particular evening, I had decided to just stay on I-40 because I just wanted to go home and go to bed. It was Thursday and there was no class on Friday and I wanted to get in bed early so I could go into the woods and go hiking early the next day and watch the sun come up. As I jumped off of I-40 onto the exit where my parents lived, the night seemed to get darker and none of the animals that I could hear through my rolled down windows made any more noise. I have never faced any kind of anxiety in my life, but at that moment something felt off and there was no way I could put my finger on what it was. I came to a stop on the exit ramp, turned to go down the road, and I happened to notice that the gas station off the exit where Mom and Dad lived had no lights on. They were a 24-hour truck stop and always had lights on, but I didn't think about it again after noticing. I just chalked it up to the power being out, but I could not shake the feeling that something was definitely askew. I slowly shifted through all of my old truck's gears, not wanting to make any more noise than the old pickup already did. I leaned over my steering wheel to look up at the moon through the windshield. There were barely any stars visible, which was way out of the ordinary. If you've ever been to Appalachia, primarily the sparsely populated areas where I'm from, you can see the Milky Way on clear nights. An absence of stars back home is only due to cloud cover or whatever in the hell went on this particular night. As I rounded a particularly sharp left-hand curve and chugged through a straight stretch before the next right-hander, I looked at the ancient decaying barn I always gazed at when riding that stretch of road and thought about how long that thing had been here and how many advancements and civilization it had seen. For the split second that my gaze wandered, a very large, sickly-looking dog ran out in front of my truck, no more than 10 feet in front of me. Old Betsy was a good truck, but she didn't stop well. I heard the fence post I had left in my truck bounce out of my bed and then back into it as I slid to a stop. My first thought was, oh no, now I have to go tell these neighbors that I ran over their dog. That shit doesn't go real far with people around here. It can really set them off depending on the dog and the person. As I sat there breathing in the smell of burning rubber, something else found its way into my nose. The stench of rotting flesh. It's not a smell you forget once you smell it one time. I didn't pay much attention to it at the time. I just chalked it up to some rotting roadkill nearby. Finally, I thought to myself, let me go check and see who this dog belongs to. I pushed my clutch in, shifted to reverse, and as I looked in my rearview mirror, illuminated by the haunting glow of my reverse lamps, was the same dog. Only it wasn't on four legs anymore. It had stood up like a man well over 10 foot tall. Only then did it dawn on me that the front of my truck was every bit of 5 feet tall, and this dog was every bit of 5 foot tall at the shoulder on all fours. As it turned its head to look in the direction of my truck, I caught only a glimpse of this creature. It was not a dog. It was not a man. It was somewhere in between, and at the same time entirely separate altogether. Its skin hung loose off of its emaciated and thin frame, like a raccoon. Bits of matted fur and dirt and mud clung to its legs like a disease. The right arm seemed a little longer than the left, and they both hung abnormally low, in relation to either animal this creature seemed to be. As it regained its senses, it turned and looked into the mirror like it knew exactly where I was sitting. The face was that of a man's, but the very edges of its face seemed to not be totally defined. They seemed to move and change like something you would see at a cellular level in a scientific documentary. There were no eyes, but only sockets where eyes should have been. No hair, and the skin that was dripping off of its face was a cold, lifeless gray color. The nose was short and shoved into its face like a bulldog. The teeth still haunt me. It was definitely carnivorous. And true to the form of the rest of its unnatural look, many of the teeth didn't seem to be arranged in a natural way in its mouth. They seemed to fill and spill forth from the indefinable face, almost like they knew the horror they occupied and they were searching for a way out. It stared through my life, into my eyes, and past my soul. It seemed like an eternity, but it could have not been more than 5 seconds that I sat there paralyzed. A light came on at the house next to the road, causing the creature to snap its gaze in that direction and tear off into the woods on its back two legs, like a man. I jammed my old truck in first gear and roasted tires all the way through first, snatched second gear, and drove as fast as I could home. When I got to the house, both of my parents were asleep. I went downstairs into my bedroom and loaded every firearm I possessed and locked all of the doors. I couldn't wake them up. I mean, who the hell would believe that? And at 10:30 on a Thursday night, the basement was eerily quiet that night. Even their dogs that got up to raise hell at outside animals at all hours of the night were dead silent. The old post and beam house didn't even creak or pop that night, as was usual. At about 3 a.m., I started to finally get drowsy, and as I went to lay my head down to get some sleep, so I could still attempt to go hiking the next morning, I smelled the stench of death again. It was faint at first, but it was definitely there. I thought to myself, "You're just going crazy. None of that shit was real." But as I dwelt on it, it became more and more noticeable until it filled the entire basement. My dad has a home office in the basement with two large glass doors that face National Forest, 500,000 acre woods. I finally worked up the courage to walk out of my bedroom and into the basement living room, with my little tactical 12 gauge loaded, tack light on. I covered the flashlight with my hand so as not to make my presence known until need be. And as I turned right out of the living room into my father's office, I shined the light through the glass doors and at the edge of the woods. There stood the creature. It was motionless. It stared right into the light, unafraid, with those soulless sockets devoid of eyes. I quickly covered my tactical light, ran into the living room and flipped on the outdoor floodlights, and to my surprise, it was no longer standing at the edge of the woods, but between the house and the edge of the woods. Still motionless, though. I swung the door open and fired every round I had into its direction. I must have scored a couple of hits because it screeched an unearthly scream, like that of a woman being slaughtered, as it took off into the woods. The dogs went crazy. Mom and Dad woke up asking me what the hell I was doing. I told them that a bear had gone to the trash and I was scaring it away. They didn't believe me, but I knew they wouldn't believe the truth either. I didn't sleep that night or any time until the following Sunday. Everything seemed to return to normal and I didn't think about the creature again until I met my wife about 6 years later. Her mother's house sits at the mouth of the holler, no more than 4 or 5 miles up the road from my mother and father's. Up on the side of the holler, there are kennels for her brother's hunting dogs. No longer in use and haven't been in years, but the fence is still there and the concrete pad is still there. It's a thing of great use when you need to quarantine an animal. Her Great Pyrenees had gotten into a tussle with a raccoon, which of course he destroyed, but his rabies vaccination had lapsed, so we had to keep him quarantined for a time. It didn't bother him, as he kind of liked solitude. This particular night that we were coming home from a movie day in a neighboring town was the last night of quarantine for him. So we walked up the trail using our phone flashlights to get to the kennel, and there he sat, patiently waiting, tail wagging happy to see us. We put him on a leash and started walking back to the house with him. As we were walking back through the darkness, I started to feel the same feeling I had felt the night I hit the creature in my truck. I didn't say anything so as not to alarm my wife, but then the smell came wafting in on the breeze. She jokingly asked me, "My God, what did you eat? You stink." I half-assed laughed, not being able to fully appreciate the joke for the horrors that raged within my mind. She immediately caught on and asked me what was wrong, to which I could only reply, "I'll tell you later." She grew up in the woods and around hunting and things of that nature her whole life, so she knew what I meant. She knew we were being watched by something. When we could see the lights of the house from the trail to the kennel, we heard it. There came barking from the kennel that sounded just like the Great Pyrenees we had on a leash next to us. It was a perfect imitation. The Pyrenees, being a guardian dog, immediately sensed that something was wrong, and so he turned to face the danger, belting out deep barks and growls in that direction. I don't know if you've ever had to drag a 150-pound dog, but it sucks. and it's not an easy task. I'm 6 foot tall and 240 pounds, and it was all I could do to get him back to the house. The barking never ceased the entire time we were running toward the house. In fact, it seemed to grow closer and closer, till it seemed it was coming from inside my own head. Her mother heard the commotion and flipped the floodlights on as we made it into the fence of the yard, and I caught a glimpse of something coming to a dead stop at the end. At the end of where the light reached, wheeling around and tearing off back into the darkness. My wife looks at me and goes, "You want to tell me what the fuck that was?" To which I replied, "Yes, let's just go inside." I told her the story, and she listened intently, hanging on to every word. Her family came from a long line of granny witches and other supernatural healers of the Appalachians, so her older sister came over the next morning with some herbs and chants to bless the property and to ward off evil. I suggested we go up to the dog kennels and do them as well. When we got to the kennels, they were completely destroyed. The very concrete foundation was cracked, and the chain link fence was torn off of its posts. The dog houses were destroyed, and the place reeked of the stench that followed the creature. My wife's older sister just went about her business like normal, blessed the place and burned some herbs and led us back into the property. When we got into the house, she wheeled about on us suddenly and instructed us very firmly to never go into the woods after dark. Not until this thing left me alone. To make a long story short, my wife joined the military and she ended up getting stationed in Delaware. Well, as someone who's lived around fairly large mountains and endless wilderness their entire life, Delaware is pretty terrible. At least that was my thought when we first moved to the middle of a 50,000 plus population city. Fortunately though, it didn't take us long to find a house in a sleepy little community further south. We purchased the house and moved in with haste. We were both very grateful and glad to be out of the city and into a rural setting again. The land in Delaware seems lifeless in comparison to Appalachia. The sparsely populated woods don't possess any energy that goes one way or the other. The ground doesn't seem to be alive like it is in Appalachia. Having not thought about the creature in a long time, I resumed my staying outside after dark and playing with our dogs in our rather large yard that borders a small patch of woods. Well, last night, I went outside to play with the dogs, and as dark set in, I built a decent-sized fire in my fire pit and consumed some good old-fashioned Appalachian mountain cough syrup from a mason jar. And just as the fire was dying down, my American bulldog tore off towards the woods. He has a habit of running off to go on adventures, so my immediate instinct was to chase him down in the yard and tackle him so he could not get away. As I tackled his 110-pound ass to the ground and threw him in a fireman's carry over my shoulders, I heard him begin to bark. Only the bark was not coming from him. The only sound coming from him was a deep, rumbling growl, a noise I've never really heard him make. It was a threatening noise. Something was definitely wrong, and as I ran with him on my shoulders back to the house, the stench of death again began to fill the air. The two other dogs must have caught wind of what was happening and met me at the back door, which I threw open, slammed shut, locked, and again loaded my firearms. How the hell could this thing have followed us 650 miles up here? As I flipped my floodlights on the backside of my house, several of the bushes and small trees at the forest's edge were still shaking like something had just run through them. My dogs went crazy all night, barking and howling and attempting to get out of the windows. I didn't sleep a bit, and I don't think I will for a while. I know for sure I won't be in the woods after dark ever again in my life. Not until this thing is gone. Originally, I'm from West Virginia. I moved around between the Appalachian and the Midwest some as a kid. Between the ages of 10 to 13, I lived in rural Kentucky in the foothills of one of the oldest mountain ranges on the planet. I lived with my dad and my grams. We lived in kind of like a cul-de-sac in between a set of foothills. We lived in the middle of the neighborhood with nothing but my family on both sides. No one lived across from us or behind us because of the foothills. When I moved in, my grandma had some rules I had to follow. At the time, I chalked them up to hillbilly stranger danger. They were saying like, don't mess around with the wild animals, don't go out into the woods alone, and then they got a little weird. If you hear your name, don't answer and don't go to it. And if you see someone in the woods you might know, no you didn't, just come home. This experience happened in August when I was 11. My dad and I had mowed a path through the tall grass and berry bushes to the left of the double wide we lived in. We camped out there a lot because it was close enough that we could check on my grandma. Now when you're in the woods, things are louder than you think. You have animal life, bugs chattering, wind through the trees and grass. There was a stream that ran along the road you could easily hear. That night, we added the campfire to that list. My dad decided to go back up to the house about a quarter mile to get more beer and to check on Grandma. Before he left, he told me to not mess with the fire. After a few minutes of watching the fire, things started to get quiet. Like real quiet. The wind had all but stopped. Bug and animal sounds were all gone, and the stream sounded like it was miles away. I was getting uncomfortable, even though I've been left at the campground before like this. Then I started to smell and taste it. It was in the back of my throat out of nowhere. This awful metal tang. After a few more moments of dread, my dad came back. He was mad right away. Said he could smell burning metal coming up the trail. He accused me of tossing beer cans in the fire. I told him I didn't, and even pointed to the fire to prove it. He said there was a storm coming in, and we needed to get back home, and he let it go. We left the tent and started our way back. Now the very cool but very weird thing about lightning in the woods this dense is when the lightning lights up everything, like the middle of the day, well up into the front of the trees. After the first set of trees, it's pitch black. There are no street lights, and unless you have lights on your property, it's completely black. So it's pitch black, lightly raining, and other than dim lights from the house windows, there's nothing. I'm eating watermelon as one does in August in the mountains when the first clap of lightning hits. Everything is as bright as it can be. After the second passes, it's pitch black. Next clap of lightning comes, and that's when I kind of see it. On the porch, past the yard, over the stream, past the road, and the ditches on either side, just past the first line of trees. I could see the silhouette of it. Then it goes dark. This is also when I can start to taste the same awful burning metal. I'm not really sure what I saw, so I kind of just stay still. It's a few moments before the lightning hits again. The figure is now closer, standing side by side to the trees. I'm standing now, not sure what to do. Not wanting to see it again or get any closer, I run inside. My grandma is doing dishes and asks why I'm inside. I tell her I think I saw something. She almost immediately gets my dad on his feet, telling him to shut and lock all the windows and doors. My dad, vaguely drunk, obeys. That night I sleep with her, and the next day we discover the tent door is torn off. It didn't look like an animal. Things weren't cut or shredded, but looked like someone took and pulled it apart. My uncle, who lived a mile or so up, had all 8 chickens killed. Heads gone, but no blood. The next few weeks, all the kids had to wait for the bus with an adult. My dad had to be late for work for almost 3 weeks. Anytime I tried to talk about it, I just had the subject changed. I just figured I was a kid and it wasn't important or real. But it wasn't until years later I finally understood. I was in my early 20s and some cousins were in town for Halloween. As I was telling this story, my aunt got irate with me, saying, "Don't you tell them that. Don't you put that evil on them." After I couldn't help but think back on all the times I tried to talk about it and how I was shunned. My kid mind not realizing it wasn't as simple as a subject change, but then actively shushing me. Once I started dipping my toes in Reddit, I realized there was a name for this thing. The same name my auntie had called it that day at the party, and other people have seen it. The goat men. What bothers me the most is how to this day I couldn't describe any feature, nor have I ever tasted that awful burning metal taste. So friends, if you ever find yourself in the foothills of Kentucky, please remember my grandma's rules. I once had a close friend who was an avid hiker. We will call her Annie for the sake of keeping her identity safe. She spent most of her free time hiking trails in and around the Appalachian region of Tennessee and North Carolina. No matter what the time of year was, she would always be out hiking. One summer, she decided to spend a few weeks hiking the Appalachian Trail. She wasn't going to do the full thing. She just intended to start at the beginning in Springer Mountain, Georgia, and finish up at the Shenandoah National Park in Virginia. I was all for it and encouraged her to do it. I even helped her prepare, and we even arranged for me to meet her where the trail crossed through the Newfound Gap area in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. I was going to bring her new supplies and hike for a few days with her along the trail while she was in the park, close by to where I lived at the time. The time came for her to begin her journey, and I drove her to the trailhead, dropping her off and left behind a very excited and determined Annie. During the first few weeks of her journey, I received several postcards from her as she would stop in and pick up her prearranged packages containing re-ups of food and supplies. She would write as often as she could to assure me that she was safe and making good time. Eventually, July rolled around and it was getting close to when I was going to meet her. Before she left, we had sat down and figured out about when she would be reaching the backcountry shelter we were set to meet at. July 10th was the day we settled on. She was supposed to send me a postcard from the last re-up spot before when we were set to meet. And true to all of her previous cards, I received one detailing that she felt great, that she was on schedule to meet me at the Mount Leconte shelter on July 7th. I had received the card on July 2nd. We were going to stay at the lodge for the evening and have dinner and rest up before continuing the trail. Mount Leconte Lodge was one of the more popular destinations in the park, and you had to make the reservation months in advance in order to have a shelter for one night. It was important that we stayed true to our schedule, and Annie knew this very well. I gathered up all of the supplies we would need and had my then boyfriend drive me to the trailhead. He was going to hike with me to the shelter and leave once I had met up with Annie. We had a great time hiking there, enjoying the breathtaking views of the Smokies, while panting and sweating our way up the steep climbs. Eventually, we made it to the shelter, and I fully expected Annie to be there waiting for us. It was mid-afternoon, and we had been running an hour or two behind schedule. We went to the front desk to see if she had made it and checked in, only to find out that she had not arrived yet. We didn't think much of it because you can't be completely sure when someone is going to arrive with this kind of stuff, so we took our gear and settled in our bunker. We went up to the lodge and had some coffee and leisurely enjoyed our books and the views while waiting for Annie to arrive. Sunset came and she still hadn't shown up. This is when I began to get worried. My boyfriend and I walked over to the office and asked if anyone named Annie had tried to check in, and to our dismay, no one had. We went back to our shelter and my boyfriend tried to calm me down as my anxiety began to take over. She's probably running behind schedule. The trails in this area of the park reach the highest elevations of the entire Appalachian. She probably got worn out and fell behind track, he assured me. If she doesn't get here tonight, she'll probably make it by tomorrow. Don't worry. I tried to let his words soothe my worries as we lay down for rest, but I endured a long sleepless night. She didn't show up the next day. We waited at the office for hours, but she never came. Around 2 in the afternoon, we decided to hike down the trail towards the direction she was due to be coming from. We told the lady at the office to tell Annie we would be back if she arrived while we were gone. We made it back to the lodge around 5 p.m. and found out she had not been there. From this point, things got hectic. I won't go into much detail with it, but we had no choice but to leave the lodge and return home, leaving contact information with the people at the lodge to let us know if she ever arrived. Days passed and no sign of her arose. Anxiety and guilt and fear ate me alive in the days following. We had notified the police and mass search parties were sent out. Rangers, the police, and volunteers scoured the area between where she was last seen and where she was supposed to arrive. It wasn't until almost a week and a half later that they found her, bruised and starving, hiding in a ravine about 30 miles away from the Appalachian Trail and the shelter she last stayed at. Just over a day later, I was finally allowed to see her at the hospital. She didn't tell the police anything about what happened. She hadn't even spoken at all. Matter of fact, it took her a few years to tell me what had fully happened to her, including the details that she wouldn't tell the police. The experience had made her quit hiking altogether. I'm not sure if she would like me sharing this with you guys, but I want people to be aware that this exists and is something you should look out for when hiking. The Smokies most likely aren't the only place where this can happen. I will tell you exactly as I remember, in her words, the best I can. I left the shelter at around 8 in the morning on June 31st, and I hiked most of the day, making really good time. I was resting and eating some snacks to give me the last boost of energy I needed to make it to my campsite for the night. It was late in the afternoon, and that's when I first heard it. The sounds of men's voices came from a pretty good distance away, but I figured it was just some guys walking the trail, nothing out of the ordinary. I sat there for another 15 minutes, but nobody ever walked by. The voices would come in and out. It was weird. But at this point, I had been hiking alone for a few weeks, so I assumed I was just making up things in my head because I was lacking regular human contact. I grabbed my things and continued on my way, reaching my campsite just as the sun disappeared and light was waning. I set up my tent and strung my belongings up on the wire cables to keep them from bears and animals if they decided to wander over. I was relaxing in my sleeping bag, reading a book when I heard it again. Voices, louder now than before. I could faintly make out heavy Appalachian accents, though it was still difficult to make out their conversation. I waited for the sound of leaves crunching or twigs cracking to indicate hikers joining my sight, but the sound never came. I shut my eyes and willed myself to sleep. You're just hearing things, I told myself. The next morning greeted me with the soft sounds of birds chirping and a soft breeze humming through the trees and against my tent. I went outside and, to my dismay, found some wrappers of my freeze-dried blood scattered across the ground. They looked as if they had been torn into, and all the food was gone. It was only a couple of packs, so I still had a decent supply. I guess the squirrels had found a way into my backpack. The only strange part about it was that my backpack was zipped shut and didn't show any signs of any nibbling or scratches an animal would have left. I packed up my campsite uneasily, trying not to think about the coincidence of the voices I heard the night before. I walked faster this day, trying to keep a quicker pace with the hopes that I would leave the weird voices and strange happenings behind me. I had been hiking for a few hours, passing a very minimal amount of people. When I heard the voices again, they didn't go away this time. They always seemed to stay at a steady pace behind me, and no matter how many times I looked over my shoulder, I could never find anyone. I came upon my next campsite and made the split decision to hike through the night. If these people who had been following me were dangerous, I didn't want to set up camp and leave myself in a vulnerable position to be attacked. I walked slowly through the night, using my flashlight as a guide. The voices had stopped a couple of hours ago, and I was beginning to feel like I had lost them, whoever they were. I came to a small opening in the trail and decided I would rest for a few hours, because my feet felt like they were on fire from all the walking I had done. I hadn't even taken the tent from my backpack when I heard the voices, this time directly behind me. There she is, a deep voice rung through my ears, and I spun around, pointing my flashlight in the eyes of two men who were ragged, dirty, and unshaven. The look in their eyes was sinister, and I will never forget the way my skin crawled beneath their gaze. I screamed and took off running in the direction I had come from. I could hear their bare feet running along the trail behind me as I ran. When I was far enough away and over a hill, I cut off the trail and sprinted as fast as I could through the brush and trees. It was breaking dawn at this point, so I was able to maneuver easier than if it were still pitch black out. For the next 2 weeks, I hid in the woods, dodging their looming voices and hiding in bushes. They were never far off. Sometimes I would see them, wandering around and talking about the things they wanted to do to me. They looked as if they hadn't bathed in months, and they both only wore torn-up cargo shorts. Their hair was long and their bodies were covered in mud. I knew I wouldn't have anyone looking for me for at least another week, because no one was expecting me until July 7th. I barely fended for myself, struggling to find water and to ration my food accordingly. I knew if they found me, they would do bad things to me. I felt it in their eyes. I felt it when I looked at their clenched fists and heard their raspy voices. Eventually, a park ranger and a group of volunteers found me. A few weeks after being home and out of the hospital, I did some research and found out there were people who would hide in the mountains to escape the law, living there in order to avoid jail for the crimes they had committed. There were people who had murdered and violated people in many ways, in ways that would have warranted life in jail or even death. They are called the Wild Men. After hearing her story, I haven't gone hiking much. They can't possibly be the only ones out there. If you go hiking deep in the mountains, be sure to watch your back, because the Wild Men are always lurking. To start this off, I need to give some context. I'm 23 and I currently live in New York City, but I have grandparents who live middle of nowhere in West Virginia. When I say that, I mean the literal boonies. Their closest neighbors are over an hour away in a small town with a few houses and a Walmart. Last summer, my grandfather, who I'll just call Robert for privacy reasons, had surgery done to his hip. The majority of my family lives on the West Coast, and my grandmother, who I'll just refer to as Muriel, is very old and wouldn't have been able to take care of Robert. Because I was the closest family member, I was the one they asked to come down there and help out with my grandfather. Being the good grandson I am, I agreed to come down there for 2 weeks while he recovered from his surgery. But fast forward a week, everything was going fine. All I really had to do was help my grandfather up and down the stairs and walk his dog, a blue heeler named Rocky. Normally, my grandfather would walk Rocky once in the morning and once at night through the woods, behind their property. But because of his surgery, that responsibility fell onto me. This was the part that I hated about helping him, because ever since a kid, I never liked those woods behind the property. Whenever I'd go down there as a kid, me and my cousins would always get creeped out going into that forest. It always just felt off for some reason. Anyways, for the first week, walking Rocky in the forest at night was fine, even if a bit creepy. That was until one night, a week into my stay, I was walking him through the forest. It was around 8:30, and the sun was setting over the Appalachian Mountains. Everything was going normal until I heard a strange whistle that sounded like it was only around 20 yards away. Both me and the dog stopped dead in our tracks and looked towards the direction the whistling came from. I shined my flashlight in the direction, but I didn't see anything, so I just assumed it was a bird. Looking back, it definitely wasn't a bird. There's no nocturnal birds that chirp and whistle out there, and it sounded more musical than anything a bird could whistle. But the dog was spooked. He wouldn't stop growling and staring at whatever was back there, and he kept trying to back up until whatever or whoever this thing was whistled again, to which the dog started barking and going crazy. At this point, I decided that I definitely didn't want to stay there, so I yanked on the dog's leash, and we both bolted out of the woods and went straight back home. When we got back, and I told my grandparents what happened, they both seemed spooked, and my grandmother immediately asked if I whistled back. I told her that I didn't, and she seemed relieved, but told me that I didn't hear anything and to just ignore it. I asked why, and she wouldn't tell me, and would instead tell me I didn't hear anything. I decided not to press it any further, and I went to bed, terrified and wondering what she seemed so freaked out about. The next morning, she told me that instead of walking Rocky through the woods, I could just take him on a few laps around the house, so that's what I started doing. Every night, I would take Rocky for around 50 laps around the house before going back inside. On Friday, the third to the last day I would be there, at night, I was walking the dog again for laps, as usual, until I heard that same creepy whistle behind the attached garage, which was only around 10 yards from the house. This time, I immediately took the dog back inside and locked the doors. The rest of the night, I put in my earbuds and I ignored any more whistling like my grandmother told me to. To this day, I still don't know what was whistling in those woods. Some of my friends said it was a skinwalker, but that's not really a thing around here. My girlfriend, who stayed back in New York City, asked her Muslim parents, who are from Yemen, and they said whistling at night is a sign that a jinn is nearby. I don't know what that was, but whatever it was had my parents legitimately scared. I've heard of weird shit happening in Appalachia, but this is the first time I've ever had a first-hand experience with it. Does anyone have any idea what this could have been? If you ever end up in the mountains after sundown, be careful, be respectful, and most importantly, don't touch the skulls. The first time someone told me that, I thought they were strange, superstitious folk. I just moved to a little town nestled in the Appalachian Mountains, looking for a new start away from the busy cities I lived in for all of my life. A house with forest for a backyard and neighbors a mile or so away sounded perfect at the time. It's what led me to buying the property in the first place. Don't get me wrong, the house is nice. It has a few problems though, like a creaking porch and the kitchen is a bit too small for my liking, but it's cute. Quaint is what the realtor kept saying when she showed me the rooms and I agreed with her. Even if it is a little small, the real selling point was the acres of forest that would be considered mine. I remember my first trip to the town at the base of the mountain, a small place where everyone knows each other. Naturally, some weren't sure about me, but most were actually nice. Asking where I grew up, what I did for work, normal questions, until the owner of the only grocery store in town, Mr. Faraday, asked me if I planned on hiking in the forest. Well, yes, of course. I think I laughed as he bagged up my groceries, eyeing me the entire time. Of course, silly question, he agreed, as he handed me the bags and then continued. The forest is perfectly safe during the day. Just get home once the sun starts setting. You're asking for trouble with the wildlife, or you'll get lost if it gets too dark. Anything in particular I should worry about? I mean, we get black bears sometimes. All you have to do is yell at them though, and they'll run usually. Scaredy cats. The lot of them, unless you find a mama. Moose, foxes, wild boars, and even wolves. I paused in gathering up my bags and repeated. Wolves? I thought wolves were extinct here in the Appalachians. Mr. Faraday shrugged and ignored my question, continuing like I hadn't said anything. Be careful out there. Always take water. Be respectful. Don't be one of them city folk that make a mess of the place. See a flower and think it's pretty. You take a picture and leave it alone. Easy enough? Anything else I should do? I wanted to be nice and not just blow the guy off, even if most of his advice was common sense. Then again, I didn't doubt that there had been trouble in the past with some outsiders. It happened all the time in the parks I would go to as a kid. Jerks that would come through and leave beer cans or cigarette butts everywhere. He met my eyes, staring for a second too soon, before he replied. If you see skulls or bones, don't touch them. If they are in the way, you go around them. I stared back, feeling uneasy as he suddenly smiled and said, You come back soon, you hear? I run specials every week on fresh produce and meat. I should have listened better to him. The first few times I ventured into the forest, it was always in the late morning. There's an old trail behind the house, overgrown but still usable. There are all kinds of songbirds and small animals and interesting plant life to see. I tried going in the morning when it wasn't too hot. I also made sure to bring water and wore good hiking boots whenever I had time for a walk before work. There is a point in the trail where it branches off into two directions, and that is the point where I turned back around. The last thing I wanted was to choose the wrong path and end up hopelessly lost or unable to find my way back. Then work changed my schedule, so I started going in the late afternoon. I stayed out longer, just getting done with my hike as the sky was bathed in pinks and oranges. The sun no longer visible, but giving just enough light. I never noticed anything different between the morning and late afternoon hikes, other than less birds singing. Then small things began to happen, little oddities that were easy to write off. Trees that had long scratches down their trunks, or the songbirds quieting down at the start of my afternoon hikes, rather than towards the end. I figured it was from the seasons changing, the nights getting longer and days shortening. I had to be quick about my daily routine, only letting myself get maybe a mile into the forest before turning around. Even if I didn't believe the townsfolk that had gotten more vocal about being mindful of myself in the woods, I still didn't want to get lost. And then I came across a deer skull. It was in the middle of the path back to my house, bleached and cracked, looking far too old. I looked around the trees to see if anyone was around because I hadn't been there on my way up the mountain. I even called out, a nervous, "Hello?" and got nothing. The idea of leaving it where I constantly treaded made me sick, so I grabbed a stick and carefully put it through one of the eye sockets. I took a breath, then tossed it off into the trees. Watching as it hit the ground before dropping the stick and quickly making my way back home. That's when the howling started. It woke me up in the dead of night. A long, lone howl off in the distance. I was confused, startled, because until that point, I had never heard a wolf howl before that wasn't on TV. I didn't even know if that's what it was. I laid there for a while, listening to it, then turned on some music to drown it out and go back to sleep. For a week, I would wake up in a cold sweat and the wolf would be singing away until I finally started going to sleep with music. I asked about it the next time I went into town, curious if anyone else had heard it, but nobody did. Mr. Faraday shook his head and said he hadn't heard any noise as he gave me change for my groceries. The pharmacist told me it was probably just a lonely or hurt animal when I was looking for some sleep aid. Even the waitress at the diner shrugged and said, Haven't heard a thing, honey. Just make sure to keep your doors locked. Always better to be safe than sorry. The next time I went into the forest, I made sure it was right after work so I could enjoy a nice long stroll. The trees with the scratches were closer to my home, but I shrugged it off, figuring it was a bear or a moose. I did my usual circuit, followed the trail until I got to where it branches off and took a minor break, sitting on a fallen tree to drink some water. As I got up to start my way down, I noticed that the forest had become quiet. I felt nervous, glancing around to look for a reason, like a bear stalking about, but found nothing. At that point, I quickly headed back home and nearly tripped over another skull. A moose skull, going off the huge antlers still attached to the white bone, perfectly preserved and staring in my direction. I looked around, wanting to find who was messing with me, but I couldn't see anything but trees and lush ferns. I thought about picking it up and throwing it to the side, but I took a breath and walked around it, then began running back home. It appeared two more times before I had enough. On the third time, I picked it up and threw it into the trees. I didn't stay to watch where it landed, and the moment I got home, I slammed the door and locked up everything. I was shaking, trembling in my kitchen after locking the back door and dared to look out the window. I didn't see anything, but I felt like something was watching me. A howl didn't wake me up that night, no. The sound of my porch creaking did. The groaning of wood had my eyes snapping open as my heart leapt into my throat. I laid in bed, unable to move, when I heard a low growl near my window. The curtain was so drawn, I couldn't see outside, but I could hear whatever it was. The sound was that of an animal. Something didn't quite sound right. I tried putting my finger on it when the growling stopped for a second. Then a howl rattled my windows and my bones. I rushed to my bathroom, the only place in the house that had no windows, and slammed the door shut, curling up in the bathtub. I didn't move until my alarm rang at 7 and the sun was shining through the curtains. It kept happening. Every night, the porch would creak. The growling would begin, then finally the howls that lasted until the sun came up. I had enough by the 4th or 5th night and drove back to town, functioning on a cocktail of adrenaline, fear, and caffeine. I had to wait for the store to open, but the moment it did, I sought out Mr. Faraday, who was stocking some items on the shelves. He glanced at me, then said, "You look like shit. If you need help sleeping, you should see the doctor." "Something keeps showing up at my house. I think it's that wolf I was telling you about." He froze, a slight tremor in his fingers before he turned, calling, "Sarah, mind the front, I'll be back." He didn't wait for a reply and instead headed to the back of the store, motioning for me to come along. I did, following him through a door that led outside. Once out in the too sunny morning, he lit a cigarette then sighed, "I told you to mind the bones." I broke down at that point, lack of sleep leaving me without a filter. It kept showing up. I ignored it the first time and it kept getting in my way. What was it? A moose skull. There was another skull 2 weeks ago. It was a deer, but I moved that with a stick. A shake of the head. Still counts, son. What happened after you moved the deer? I admitted that's when the howling first started, but it was far off in the distance. Easy to ignore. Something that had him frowning, but not interrupting until I finally asked. "It's not a wolf, is it?" Mr. Faraday looked at me for a long time, then stubbed out the cigarette before reaching for another one. "I told you what not to do, and yet you did it. Now you've got a mess to deal with." I opened my mouth, so ready to demand he answer my question, but he kept going. "Now listen here, and you listen. You're going to buy some meat, the reddest, bloodiest meat I have, then go home and put them in the fridge. When the sun is setting, you're going to go in that forest with the meat and put it on the path. The minute you do that, you turn tail and run home. You don't look back. No matter what sounds you hear or feelings you get, you run and lock up tight. And it'll just go away." "Just like that?" I asked, feeling a tiny bit hopeful. The next words dashed those hopes away. "Nothing is guaranteed, son. This is you trying to make amends. It doesn't mean you'll be forgiven." Anger boiled in me, and I snapped at him. "I didn't even do anything." He shook his head with a small frown and said, "You show disrespect and acknowledge them. That's enough in a place like this." I opened my mouth, but he brushed past me and asked, "You gonna buy the meat or what?" I ended up doing so. I didn't know what else to do and figured why not just go along with it. I couldn't explain anything else, so why not try to make amends? I bought the bloodiest steaks I could find and drove back home in a daze. I set an alarm to ring just before sundown and crashed on my porch until then. It was surreal, walking out to the trail as the sun began its descent. I noticed that more and more trees had the strange scratches on them and shuddered at the idea of something, or many somethings, being so close to the house. I walked about 10 minutes up the path before laying out the stakes. It was disgusting, the blood collecting on the brown butcher paper, but I piled them up, then looked around. I couldn't see anything, just the usual trees, and decided to head back home. I took a handful of steps when I heard it. A low growling from behind me that had the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. Heavy thumping followed the growling, getting closer and closer, breaking me out of my stupor. I got my feet moving again and headed back to the house as the sound of teeth ripping into raw meat met my ears. Once I was at the end of the path, my home in sight, I dared to turn my head before I ran back to the house, scrambling up the porch and barely slamming the door shut in time. It had been right behind me, following like an obedient dog. Only it wasn't a dog, not even a wolf. I had to brace myself against the door as it slammed into the wood, growling and grunting. I managed to lock it just barely before rushing to the front door to make sure I locked it as well. It nearly beat me. I hit the door just as it started to open and pushed my entire body weight against it. It seemed like it was barely enough to keep it out as I flicked the lock. I stumbled back, shaking and panting, staring at the door as the growling began all over again. This time, I followed it to the back porch and peered through the window. It walked on four legs, fingers sprayed out with long claws for nails and covered in black fur in some places, pale human skin in others. As it walked, the back legs bent unnaturally and make a horrific snapping noise, the bones visible through the skin and twisting with every movement. The head is the most disturbing, a bloodied muscle that stretches out too much for a wolf, eyes glowing red and can open the mouth far too wide. fangs are all black and red with blood. Too long, too curved. When it closes its jaws, blood oozes out. I stared at it, and it stared at me before the lips peeled back into a sort of demented smile. The growling stopped, and instead a new sound started. A sharp, high-pitched laugh, human almost, filled the air. I shivered, ready to shut the curtains when I heard more laughter. I looked beyond it, and froze at the sight of more pairs of red eyes out in the forest. The heckling grew in volume, echoing, until it's all I heard. Even now, I still hear it. I hid in the bathroom again, feeling like a child and praying that my doors and windows would hold. Once the sun came up and I mustered up enough courage to get to my car, I found dozens and dozens of skulls on my porch, all different shapes and sizes, some bleached white, others black with decay, and some even red, and others laying in pools of blood. One of them was human. I wanted to run to the car, bulldoze through the bones, but instead, I forced myself to carefully step over each and every one of them. Once I got back into town, I sought out Mr. Faraday. He listened quietly to my account, looking disappointed and annoyed by the time I was done, and said, "I told you not to look. Now you really made a mess, not just for you, but for everyone." My blood ran cold, and I asked, "What do you mean?" "Everybody heard them last night, son, because of your fuck up." He closed his eyes, then lit a cigarette, even though we stood in the paper goods aisle. "What if I just leave? Just go back where I came from?" He shook his head and flicked the ashes onto the ground, uncaring of where they ended up. "Then what? What do I do?" "You're going to clean up your own mess. A hunting party is gathering at the diner at sundown. You better be there." I asked if he really thought they could be killed, if it was possible, and he waved his hand and said, "We've done it before. You're not the first person to not listen. You won't be the last, but you made the trouble. You better be ready to help get rid of it." I swallowed, hesitating, then dared to ask, "Do people not come back from this hunting?" "All the time. This time won't be any different. Sundown, son. Or we'll not just be hunting them, but you too. We are gathered at the diner, and I've been given a shotgun and a crash course on how to use it. Shown how to load it, and told what not to do and what to watch out for. According to Mr. Faraday, who was around for the last purge, the Wolves of the Appalachians is what they call him. He's sticking close to me. He says having a buddy nearby is important. It's safer this way. The Wolves like to drag people into the forest or decapitate their victims. They collect the skulls. The bullets I have are supposed to be special, blessed by the priest and bathed in holy water or something like that. I've never hunted before. That's why I'm leaving this account in case I don't come back. Hunting accidents happen all the time. That's what the townsfolk will say if anyone comes asking about me, or anyone that doesn't come back. The sun hasn't set yet, giving us time to prepare, and the priest time to bless every bully he can. We can hear them already. The wolves are laughing again.